following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades in the intellectual wilderness of South Florida, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Welcome to a Thursday. It's Thursday. Sorry, the days just run together these days. And yes, I know there's a new Randy Rainbow video just in time. I'm going to see Randy Rainbow this Friday night. He's playing at the Fillmore, the old Jackie Gleason Theater in Miami Beach. So excited for that. So, and I keep thinking, you know, he's touring constantly. How does he have time to do this stuff? But thankfully he does. So we will get to that in just a moment. Just so you know, there's so much happening today. We've got Howie Klein coming up. If time permits, we'll speak with the candidate running for Congress from North Carolina's 2nd District. But there's tons of breaking news from, oh my goodness. It's so opposite world. From Trump saying that there's a ceasefire. Not really. We'll get to the bottom of all of it. Oh, and Mick Mulvaney admitting that there was quid pro quo with the money for Ukraine military aid. And he said, get over it. Get over it. Right. So anyway, all that's coming up. But as we do, we live. I'm using the royal we here. I live for these new Randy Rainbow videos. And although nothing will match his last one, the Cheeto Christ stupid czar, that was, you know, that one, that one stood alone. This one is really good too. And it focuses on Rudy. Rudy! All right, take it away, Randy Rainbow.
We are back and joined now by a central figure in the whistleblower complaint, as well as in many of my personal nightmares, former mayor and soon-to-be former lawyer of basically former President Donald Trump, human hand grenade Rudy Giuliani. Hey, girl.
Oh, I'm glad I'm on tonight because what you just said is totally erroneous.
Well, I don't work here. Mr. Mayor, you are under intense scrutiny for your efforts to pressure the Ukraine into investigating Joe Biden.
Let me tell you what happened, okay?
Whatever.
What happened is that I was investigating this incredible story about Joe Biden, that he bribed the president of the Ukraine in order to fire a prosecutor who was investigating his son.
Do you have proof of these allegations?
Yes, 2018. There is a finding by a court in the Ukraine that a man named Leshenko,
James Franco,
something like that, he produced a phony affidavit.
Speaking of phony, awkward dimwits, let's get back to you. Sir, did you ask the Ukraine to look into Joe Biden?
No, actually I didn't. I asked the Ukraine to investigate the allegations that there was interference in the election of 2016.
Okay, let me rephrase the question. Did you ask the Ukraine to
It's
look
Ukraine,
into Joe
not
Biden?
The Ukraine.
Of course I did.
Okay, let's move on. Sir, did you ask the Ukraine to look into Joe Biden?
No, I didn't ask him to look into Joe Biden. I asked him to look into the allegations that related to my client, which tangentially involved Joe Biden.
Joe Biden's son to get $1.5 million.
And because they're Democrats, you won't cover it.
I've been listening to you, and of crap you are full.
And you want to cover some ridiculous charge.
Standing bulging out of your skull.
You have no idea how big this is.
Look at you now in the center ring, covering how you've been yentering with Ukraine. Are you crooked or just insane?
Why do you
keep selling bullshit to us?
Won't be long
before you're under the bus.
Giuliani, there he goes again. He's
making stuff up as he goes.
And you want to cover some ridiculous charge that I urged the Ukrainian government to investigate corruption. Well, I did, and I'm proud of it.
He's made so many gaffes because he's never prepared.
I'm here on television telling you everything I do.
When he's nervous, he laughs, and it makes me feel scared. Straight up extorting Zelensky, and now he's distorting old texts he's got on his phone, cause he just got his whistle blown.
OMG,
he's like a soundbite from hell.
He makes it,
and it look like SNL.
I absolutely do.
Giuliani, here you go again.
Shady wordsmith guarding this orange turd with
lies, lies. When's he gonna let you go, Giuliani?
You're a drama queen. You guys got no chance of winning,
Giuliani. Need a drowning. More lies. He does so much spinning.
Sit back.
I have no idea.
Oh, my goodness. You know, Randy Rainbow is a genius. There's no two ways about it. And, yes, we all need a good laugh, especially on a day like this. So I mentioned it earlier, but I know people, you know, come in late. Randy Rainbow touring nonstop. And if you're in Florida, he's here this weekend. I'm seeing him in Miami Beach Friday night. I think tonight he might be in Fort Myers, and on Saturday night he's going to be in the Tampa Bay area. So if you're in Florida, John Ostojich, or however you say his name, in the YouTube chat room is going to see him tonight. That's in Fort Myers, and again, I'll be going tomorrow night. So just a little taste to wet our whistle. Thank you, Randy Rainbow, for a new video just in time for us to go see you here in Florida. He's from here, you know, and Randy Rainbow is his real name. All right, but I digress. There's so much to talk about, and there's lots of breaking news, but I'm going to start, and yes, we'll do it live today because there's so much to talk about. Instead of the latest news, I'm going to start with the sad news. Heartbroken to awake this morning to the news that Congressman Elijah Cummings passed away overnight. His office said it was due to complications concerning longstanding health challenges. So I spent probably more time than I should have this morning trying to figure out which clip to play. And it was the clip when he dealt with racism, right, recently. But what I decided to go with was this one. And it's short, but it says so much. And this was part of Elijah Cummings' closing comments. You know what? I think I have a longer clip than the one I pulled here. Hold on one second. His closing comments from, here it is. I'm going to play this version of it because it's a little longer. It's like 2 minutes. From the when Michael Cohen testified the last time before the House Oversight Committee, when he finally came clean and told the truth. And here's how Elijah Cummings closed out that hearing.
I know that this has been hard. I know that you face a lot. I know that you are worried about your family. But this is a part of your destiny. And hopefully, this portion of your destiny will lead to a better Michael Cohen, a better Donald Trump, a better United States of America, and a better world. And I mean that from the depths of my heart. When we're dancing with the angels,
here,
the question will be asked, in 2019, what did we do to make sure we kept our democracy intact? Did we stand on the sidelines and say nothing? Did we play games? And I'm tired of these statements saying, people come in here and say, oh, this is the first hearing. It is not the first hearing. The first hearing was with regard to prescription drugs. Remember, a lady sat there, Miss Wortham, her daughter, died because she could not get $333 a month in insulin. That was our first hearing. Second hearing, H.R. 1, voting rights.
Yep.
Corruption in government. Come on now. We can do more than one thing. And we have got to get back to normal.
Damn straight.
With that, this meeting is adjourned.
What? And yes, a well-deserved round of applause for Elijah Cummings. And what a loss. And actually, after that event, after that hearing, I excerpted one little thing that, you know, I have this Wall O' Sound. And, this is from the Wall O' Sound.
Come on, man.
Which will live on. It's much better than this one.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I'll take Elijah's Come On, Man any day. He will be sorely missed. What a giant. And I got to tell you, I'm no fan of the Morning Joe crew over on MSNBC, but I learned something today. He officiated at their wedding. Apparently, and I didn't see it when this happened, but apparently they were moved to tears when the news broke, as were, I'm sure, many Americans. But it elevates them a little bit in my mind that he officiated at their wedding. All right, there's other news going on, and my goodness, there's a lot of it. So, I guess now we move on to the breaking news. From Politico, I'm just going to read to you what they wrote rather than paraphrase it, and then I'll share with you a different take on it. Politico reports Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo left the Turkish presidential palace after more than 4 hours. They were meeting with Turkish President Erdogan for much of the afternoon, far longer than anyone expected. And if you remember, as of yesterday, Erdogan said he wasn't going to meet with them. He said, when Trump shows up, I'll talk. I guess he changed his tune today. So when they left, so they met with the press. They did a little press conference. Mike Pence said, we've agreed on a ceasefire. It's going to be for 120 hours. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, something is fishy here. This doesn't sound right. Just doesn't sound right. And again, I don't believe everything that I hear from MSNBC, but their chief foreign correspondent is Richard Engel, and I really respect him. I think he's as good as they come. And I like Katie Tour also. So at 2 o'clock, I turned on MSNBC, and sure enough, there's Katie Tour with a live shot from Richard Engel from Syria, and I'm going to play for you the whole exchange because this is the truth. You're not going to hear from the Trump administration or probably from anywhere else on television. But listen to Richard Engel's explanation of what this so-called ceasefire is. And make no mistake, it is not a ceasefire. It's Donald Trump once again serving up the Kurds on a platter to his newest boy crush, Erdogan.
Richard Engel is in Turkey. Richard, this is a 120-hour ceasefire, a five-day ceasefire. What's that going to mean on the ground?
On the short-term basis, it means that Turkey stops its conventional military assault. The Kurdish forces here, sometimes you heard them being called the SDF, sometimes you heard them being called the YPG. It is the same force. They are the same force we've been calling the Kurdish forces.
Yep.
This is effectively a surrender by the Kurdish forces,
so
an acknowledgement that they cannot confront the Turkish military. So now, in these next 5 days, you're going to see the Kurdish forces, YPG, SDF, whatever you want to call them, pull back from this area. That will allow them to recover some of their wounded, recover some of their dead, catch their breath. In the space in between, moving in as Kurdish forces pull back, is the Syrian army of Bashar al-Assad and Russia. I do not think, however, this is going to end the conflict. I think it might be a pause. It'll end the conventional phase of this war. But I think afterwards you could see a long protracted ground for a long protracted civil war, an ethnic war that I think will follow this period.
Horrible.
Because there is not just a conventional level to this conflict. That is the one we have all seen. We've all seen the Turkish jets. We've seen Turkish artillery on the move. We've seen Kurdish fighters trying to resist that and losing. And we've seen Assad forces move in to fill the vacuum. But there is also a much uglier side of this war, as Turkey has been using militias, radical militias, Arab militias that include ISIS and al-Qaeda members. They are already on the ground. They are already spreading out throughout Kurdish villages and some Arab villages as well, killing people, forcing people from their homes. So I think while the conventional fight might stop and Washington is going to play this as a victory, and on some levels it is, I think it just opens the door for another much less visible, longer, but equally ugly conflict.
Richard, 218 civilians have died. It's unclear how many Kurdish forces have died. This looks like, as we've seen so many times with this administration, the president creates a crisis and then goes in and tries to solve that crisis and then claims victory.
I think that's exactly what happened here. Tonight we saw the final betrayal of the Kurdish forces who fought alongside U.S. troops, who fought alongside U.S. Special Operations Forces in the fight against ISIS. These forces thought they were going to get a homeland. They had carved out a homeland for themselves, these Kurdish forces. And they had a homeland here, where I'm standing right now, for nearly 5 years. Mm. That homeland was protected by American forces. Those American forces have been ordered out. And as that order out happened, Turkey attacked. And Turkey has been defeating those Kurdish forces who, without American protection, could not defend themselves. So now those Kurdish forces are being pulled back. And as they're being pulled back, Turkey is saying it is stopping its conventional attacks. It's unclear if that means that its militia attacks will continue.
Right.
But it means that those Kurdish forces that were guaranteeing the Kurdish enclave here, a degree of Kurdish sovereignty, have now been forced to leave. So it means the end of what they call Rojava. It means the end of an autonomous area that the Kurds controlled for themselves, backed by U.S. forces here in Syria. That is what just happened right now.
So that's NBC News, Richard Engel, explaining that Donald Trump is once again feeding you a load of bullshit, that Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo lied right into the cameras when they said, oh, there's a ceasefire. It's not a ceasefire. Basically, the Kurds are told to move away from the front, from the border, right? The Syrian forces will take over from the south. The Turks will take over from the north. And the Kurds will be driven from what has been their homeland for the last 5 years, where we had been protecting them. This is not a solution. Donald Trump lit the place on fire and now swoops in and pretends to put out the fire, but he throws gasoline on it. Richard Engel came back for one more segment with Katie Tour. Here's what they said.
By the way, in that press conference, go back. There was a question asked to Vice President Pence, and then Pompeo weighed in about the Kurds carrying out atrocities against Christian communities here. That is something that Turkish propaganda has been pushing. We have seen nothing like that of any sort. It has been, in fact, the Turkish militias that have been carrying out atrocities, just for the record. So somebody put that into the Vice President's head. Somebody else put that into Secretary of State Pompeo's head. The Kurdish forces who were here worked for over 4 years hand in glove with U.S. forces. They killed somewhere between 60,000 and 100,000 ISIS fighters, put them in prison. The Kurds lost 11,000 people. They had 23,000 injuries. In the course of this fight, they formed a close friendship with American forces. American forces have been watching them for the last week get attacked by both Turkey and its radical militias and not in a position to help. The U.S. forces were put in a very uncomfortable position. They hated the fact that they had to watch this. They hated the fact that they watched their ally lose control of territory, lose their lives, forced to reach out to make a deal with their former enemies, the government of Bashar al-Assad. And tonight, they are watching once again as American troops pull out that their allies, their friends who fought against ISIS with them, lost their homeland, had it divided in half. Half of it going to Turkey, the other half going to Bashar al-Assad. And then who knows how this is going to play out on the ground as these two sides fight it out and there are militias moving around and the people who were providing the only kind of security on the ground, who were the Kurds, are now, the armed Kurds, are now being told to leave.
And as you just mentioned, it seems now they're being slandered as well by the vice president and our secretary of state.
Shocking. Shocking. So there's the truth for you. Don't buy the bullshit. We need to push back. In other news, Mick Mulvaney, the acting White House chief of staff, held a press conference and told reporters that next year's G7 summit will be held at the Trump National Doral Golf Club in Miami from June 10th through 12th. Donald Trump is rubbing our faces in it. This is another violation of the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. He is thumbing his nose at the rule of law and breaking it every possible way he can and doing it in full view of the world so he can say, look, if I was doing something wrong, I'd hide it from you. I'm doing everything out in the open. It's another form of gaslighting, and he's doing it over and over and over again, and it's got to stop. And we'll keep exposing him over and over and over again. It's the least we could do, right? I mean, I don't know what else we can do until we all get together and go out on the street and sit and stay there and have a general strike until he's removed from office and until we can go to the polls on November 3rd, 2020 and vote for a reasonable human being to be the next president of the United States. It's just sickening. By the way, the Doral, I'm actually going to be down there this weekend because I have my cousin, who I haven't seen in many years, is coming down from New York to visit. I made sure they're not staying at Trump's Doral. They're staying at another hotel in Doral. And frankly, my parents are buried in their cemetery is in Doral. And next week, I just can't believe it. It's a week from today will mark 40 years since I lost my mom. It was like 10 days out from my 20th birthday. We're now 10 days out from my, or we will be next week, from my 60th. And one thing never changed. I still miss my mom as much. Anyway, so I'm planning on going down there. I thought maybe I should take a little run through, a little walk through Trump's Doral Club and see how many safety and health violations I can find right off the bat, just doing my own amateur inspection. But I don't think I want to set foot in there because, ew, cooties. Anyway, there is other news. Other news. Yesterday, yesterday marked the 1,000th day of the Trump administration occupying the White House and running roughshod over the Constitution. And yes, it was momentous. At a meeting of congressional leaders and Donald Trump at the White House, things quickly devolved into what Speaker Nancy Pelosi described as a meltdown.
We witnessed on the part of the president was a meltdown.
He said that there are communists involved and you guys might like that.
When he started calling Speaker Pelosi a third-rate politician.
Which I said, I wish you were a politician, Mr. President.
Yeah. Pelosi reportedly challenged Trump on Russia's involvement in Syria, saying, all roads with you lead to Putin. In fact, she said that's probably what she was saying when that picture was snapped, you know, the one that Donald Trump tweeted out when he, again, with his classic projection, said, crazy Nancy Pelosi having a meltdown. He can't even make up his own words. He just has to steal hers and turn them around on him. It is indeed opposite world.
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So anyway, so that happened. It's just it, It's a clusterfuck. That's the only way to put it. One of the things that may have set old Donnie off yesterday is right before that meeting, there was a big vote in the House where they overwhelmingly voted to condemn Trump's, quote, withdrawal of American forces from northern Syria. The vote was 354 to 60. 354 to 60, with some of Republican leadership joining in and voting in favor of the resolution condemning this action on Trump's part. Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy, who are both in leadership, who are in that photo, both with their head down, looking like they were, you know, doing the walk of shame or the sit of shame, I guess. They both voted with the Democrats, just saying. This afternoon, Senators Lindsey Graham and Chris Van Hollen, a Republican and a Democrat, held a news conference to announce their bipartisan sanctions legislation against Turkey. We'll see. You know, I hope they don't buy the bullshit that's being proffered by this administration on the ceasefire, because it's our second stab in the back to the Kurds. The Kurds. Just sickening. We'll see how sincere Lindsey Graham is. We'll see if he's really got the well-being of our allies, the Kurds, in mind when he pushes back on Trump, or if he's just going to fold and buy this bullshit excuse. I don't even want to think about it. Oh, by the way, one other thing. When Pence sat down with Erdogan today, did you notice usually when there's two world leaders and they're sitting in chairs, behind each leader is the flag of their country? They just had the Turkish flag twice. Another slam, another thumbing of the nose to America. Donald Trump is letting himself be rolled, and this country with it. All right, very quickly, another news. Allegedly, the EU and the UK have reached a deal on a new withdrawal agreement that will let Britain depart on orderly terms. We'll see. The head of the Liberal Democrat Party said that this is all, what did she call it? The Emperor's New Clothes. Okay, so there's that. Today, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, is testifying behind closed doors. They did release his opening statement, but frankly, to be honest with you, with everything else going on today, I barely had a chance to even look at it. But apparently he's ruffling some feathers. It might even be over by now. The thing is, before he started testifying, and we already knew he was kind of a creepy character anyway, he, again, has no background in diplomacy or government. He's a hotel guy like Trump, who donated $1 million to Trump's reelection campaign, or to Trump's inaugural committee, to buy the ambassadorship to the European Union. And granted, that happens a lot, sadly. It happened under Obama. It happens under Republicans and Democrats alike. Doesn't make it okay. It's wrong no matter what party the administration is in. Just make that clear. But before he took before he went to give his deposition this morning, shocker, breaking news, where Sondland apparently spent about $1 million on a renovation of his government-provided residence in Brussels at taxpayer expense. Listen to this. The work on the ambassador's home on the outskirts of Brussels includes more than $400,000 in kitchen renovations, nearly $30,000 for a new sound system, and $95,000 for an outdoor living pod with a pergola. I don't even know what a pergola is, and electric heating, LED lighting strips, and a remote control system, all according to government procurement records. The State Department has also allocated more than $100,000 for an alternate residence for Sondland for September and October while the work is being performed. Are you fucking kidding me? $100,000 for an alternate residence for 2 months while we're spending upwards of $1 million to renovate his taxpayer-paid-for living quarters? I'm in the wrong business. Okay. Very quickly, a tentative deal has been reached between GM and the United Auto Workers. Supposedly, they're meeting today to see if this will be the end of the strike. Keep our fingers crossed. However, in Chicago, 25,000 teachers went on strike today. Classes have been canceled in the country's third largest school district. The educators want higher pay, smaller class sizes, and more support staff. And they should get it all and then some. All right. It is Thursday. That means Howie Klein is here. So let's mix up some Dirty Debbies and get Howie on the line, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi. Hey, Nicole.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. Sad start to the day today, and out of left field, too. I was shocked. I did a double take when I heard that Elijah Cummings had passed away. I mean, I believe he was in the house yesterday.
No, he wasn't. He
wasn't
out yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Ill.
Oh, obviously.
And, you know, he was a good legislator. He was good for his constituents. He's a good guy all around. A lot of people who I know have spoken really well of him. Mm-hmm. Grayson really liked him a lot. Yep. And always told me good stuff about him for years. And so did Donna Edwards.
Wow.
And, you know, but it made me think of my own mortality since I'm older than he is.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, he was only 67. Not old at all. And but apparently, and they didn't give out many details, just said it was complications from health problems that he's been dealing with for a long time. You know, some people keep their issues quiet, and I guess was the case with Elijah Cummings. I didn't know he was sick.
Yeah, I didn't either. Although he didn't look
healthy.
Well,
right,
in the
exactly.
Last 2 years.
Yeah, that's true. But a sad loss because he was he did a great job, as I think, as chair of the House Oversight Committee. And his words meant a lot. And, yeah, he was very well respected. And he seemed like a really decent human being, which is sadly lacking in so much of Washington these days.
Yeah, and generally speaking, I mean, that committee is a very specific type of committee. And Republicans normally... find a real animal to run that committee. They'll find, you know, just someone who's a savage. And Elijah Cummings is a gentleman.
Yep.
Everyone liked him.
Yeah.
Even people who didn't agree with his agenda and his politics still don't have anything bad to say about him. I mean, compare that to a guy like Daryl Issa, who the Republicans had as the chairman of that committee at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And all they always pick someone who's a monster. And who acts like a monster. And, you know, no one will say they like Daryl Issa.
No.
From the Democratic side.
Certainly not. Right. No. But Elijah Cummings was well-liked from both sides of the aisle because he was fair.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
They liked him.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. He was always fair to people.
Yep. So that was a sad way to start the day. Moving on, where I'm still reeling from this press conference that Mike Pence just had. It wasn't really a press conference. It was more of an announcement. Where once again, they're lying to the American people and claiming that, you know, it's a ceasefire. Don't worry, protecting the Kurds. No, they're not. This is another betrayal of the Kurds where they're forced from their homeland and they've got no place to go.
Yep.
Yeah. It's horrific.
Exactly what it is. So, you know, they're trying to paint it their way. Their supporters will believe them. No normal people will. They know everything that comes out of this White House is a lie.
Yep.
And, you know, but the tragedy, of course, is for the Kurds.
Of course it is. It's just sickening. Really
and
sickening.
And for the U.S., for, you know, now people will think, well, you know, even if Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or even, God forbid, Biden becomes the next president, you know, well, we could trust them. But what if then we get another Trump after that?
Right.
And
exactly.
People will be thinking the unthinkable, that the United States is not a trustworthy ally and it doesn't pay to make any long-term arrangements with the USA.
That's right. And that's what people need to take away from this, is that he's totally denigrated the United States standing in the world. We cannot be trusted. Our word saying you're our ally, we will protect you, can never be trusted again.
Well, right. I mean, and you know, some people think, well, Trump will be gone, and then everything will go back to normal. And in fact, that's Biden's whole campaign, you know, back to normalcy campaign.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that for someone looking at the United States, they'll say, well, you guys elected him.
Yes.
And you know, who are you going to elect next? Adolf Hitler?
Yeah, obviously. Or maybe Mick Mulvaney, who actually also had a press conference today where he admitted that Donald Trump tried to extort dirt on Biden from the Ukrainian government in order to release the funds for military support that Congress had appropriated. And then he said, get over it.
That's the meaning of what he said, but it's
right.
Actually not what he said.
No, he didn't say it in those words.
That there was extortion, but that, you know, here we're talking about, everyone agrees now that there was a quid. So the quid was the military equipment.
Mm-hmm.
The quo is what now is in disagreement. What Mulvaney said is that they were only asking Ukraine to look into the 2016 election, not into Biden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's an obvious lie. You know it's a lie. Everyone in the media knows it's a lie. Everyone who's not a Trump supporter knows it's a lie. But it's the way that the Trump people can try to cover up among their supporters so their supporters can, you know, take some kind of solace by saying, well, yeah, he did it, but it was about 2016. Because even among his own supporters, when you're talking about 2020, they get a little bit nervous that, you know, is this guy someone worth supporting?
Right.
So Mulvaney admitted that he was extorting, but didn't admit that it was about 2020. Just he claims it was about 2016.
Right. Sure. The way they cover up for this guy is astounding. But yesterday, something important happened. There was a vote in the House on a measure to condemn Trump's actions in Syria with Turkey and the Kurds. And it passed by 354 to 60 with, you know, the usual suspects like, you know, Matt Gaetz and those kind of idiots all they're the 60. But included in that 354, in more than double the number of Republicans voted against it or voted for it, was Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy.
Right, the whole leadership and a lot of people, even like a guy like Nunez, right? And anybody, see, when you look at the 60, what you'll notice are people in deep, deep, deep red districts,
uh-huh,
like Gaetz.
Right.
So Gaetz can be reelected without any independents and without any Democrats. There are enough Republicans in his Florida Panhandle district to reelect him over and over, and he doesn't have to worry about what independents think, let alone Democrats. But the guy like Nunez, his district is much closer. He's in a demographically dangerous district for Republicans, and there's no way to win that district without independents. He's in danger. So if he does something insane like Gaetz, then he can lose his seat, and he knows that. Now, he's somewhat protected from that because he's raised just enormous amounts of money. Like I looked at it recently, I think it was either $8 million that he's already got in his war chest.
Wow.
So he feels he's safe anyway. But even a guy like Nunez, who's certainly one of Trump's biggest allies in Congress voted against Trump yesterday on that Syria thing. That's how crazy these Republicans know that what Trump has done between Syria and Turkey is wrong. And the 60 are all, you know, the Mark Meadows of the world. So extremists, and almost not every single one of them, but almost every single one of them is in a deep, deep red district where they don't have to worry about independents voting for them.
That's interesting. You know, one other thing I thought was interesting is four of them voted present. Three of them were Republicans. The fourth was Justin Amash. Is it just because why would he vote present?
He's conflicted over this because of he hates Trump and he knows Trump's insane, but he wants our troops out of that area really badly. Uh-huh. So, in other words, Trump did the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Right.
And Amash couldn't bring himself to vote against Trump on this particular thing. Amash is a really weird guy.
Yes.
but he's consistent, and he insists on being consistent, and that sometimes trips him up.
No, I hear you loud and clear. No, I got you there. Now, Lindsey Graham, you know, after originally a lot of Republicans, frankly, more than ever before, spoke out against Trump's actions here. And then yesterday they sort of walked it back. But not Lindsey Graham. He's making some noise about this. Do you think this might change his buddy-buddiness with Trump? Do you think this, I mean, between what Lindsey said and Mitt Romney today, it sounded like there might be two Republican Senate votes for impeachment.
Well, not Lindsey. No, but I think that Mitt, if more people do it and it's not just Romney alone, he'll vote for impeachment. I don't think he'll be the only Republican to do it, but if he can find other Republicans to do it, I think he'll go for it.
We'll see. So now here we are. This week, Democratic debate. Did you watch it?
Yes.
And I'm guessing we probably had the same overall impressions. What were your thoughts? Did anybody win? Anybody lose?
Yeah, there were more than one winner and more than one loser. From my perspective, everyone has their own perspective.
That's right.
On this.
Yep.
I was getting crazy when the Comcast television station had Claire McCaskill on. I mean, Claire McCaskill's a loser. Why have her on? She managed to win two times, but both times, like, not because anyone liked her. Her husband was killed in a plane crash one time, and then the second time she won is because the Republicans started carrying on about women, about rape being okay or something. I mean, she won under very odd circumstances. Really, she got lucky, basically, in a way, electorally lucky. She's not lucky to lose her husband.
No.
But and then the third time, she loses as an incumbent in a Democratic wave year or anti-Republican wave year. So why have her on to spout her anti-progressive nonsense that's completely predictable?
Because she's friends with Mika and Joe.
She's on talking about, you know, Amy Klobuchar and, you know, and Pete Buttigieg or whoever, whatever conservative she thought won. I thought the winner was Bernie, Elizabeth Warren.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
To me, you know, those are the two candidates I favor anyway, obviously.
Me too. Yeah.
I thought they did really, really well.
I did too, but were you bothered? Are you bothered? Look, I'm bothered on two fronts. That number one, that they kept trying to get, it was a thing. They had to get Elizabeth Warren to say, yes, taxes are going to go up under Medicare for all. Bernie explained it beautifully. It just bothered me that she just kept hedging her words.
It hurt her very badly.
Yes, I thought so too. Yeah.
But she came out, and there were a few things that hurt her. I didn't say she did a perfect job.
Right, yep.
But she, and Bernie, I think, did better
did
than
great.
She did. But I think she
came out it.
Well from this perspective. She sounds like she knows what she's talking about. And she's got, and right down into the deepest parts of what she's talking about. So I appreciate that. And when I like a good solid lecture by someone who knows what they're talking about. And she would try to do that. The moderators, of course, don't want that. They just want, you know, they'd all like single word answers. And so especially in the beginning of the debate, I thought she came out very, very, very strong. Once she started getting attacked a little bit, she was she was a little bit wobbly, and she wasn't perfect. You know, she has a real problem with that that tax thing because, yep. you know, they all think about how Mondale admitted that he's going to raise taxes, and he lost like, you know, in the biggest landslide in history, almost strictly based on that.
Right.
I mean, he might have lost anyway, but the landslide was based on
yeah,
the fact.
Yeah, I know. I wish she would just
about raising taxes.
She doesn't want to give them the sound clip. I get it. I wish she would just say, "I'm not going to give you the sound bite you want. Will taxes mm-hmm. go up? They will be without saying it. They will be offset by the fact that you will no longer have health insurance premiums or deductibles or copays." And so
well, she
as
kind of does say that.
I know,
she doesn't say it as well as Bernie says
right.
it, but that's her point, is that, you know, the net will be advantageous to the taxpayer.
Right.
But she hasn't, you know, I mean, she should sit with Bernie and you know, and
get the
should,
vernacular
like,
down.
Her, this is how you do it. Or
exactly.
she should sit with Stephanie Kelton,
yep.
who came up with
doubt.
This strategy of how to answer that question anyway.
Most definitely. So, so let's talk money for a second, because this week, in case, you know, you've been sleeping for the last month or so, we came up on the end of the quarter three fundraising. And once again, interesting that the number one fundraiser in the Democratic field was Bernie Sanders with close to $25 million. Elizabeth Warren was a close second. Pete Buttigieg came in third. Biden was down there a bit. But Buttigieg yesterday went after Warren and Bernie again, talking about something about they're not going to make it on pocket change or something. What happened to him? He's all of a sudden turned into Mr. Neolib. I guess he thinks he sees Joe Biden faltering and he thinks he can take that lane more easily than he could beat Warren or Sanders at being a progressive.
Well, I think that's always been his idea. It was that if Biden falters, he'll be the choice of the, you know, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
You know, the neolibs like him, the Wall Street guys like him. He's he's the worst. Can I use a dirty word?
You can say whatever you want on our show. Yes.
Piece of shit in the whole of everyone who's on stage.
I agree.
You know,
the more you know.
All Buttigieg is a product of McKinsey, the consulting firm.
Right.
They tell you how to talk, how to look, and how to lie without blinking. And that's what he is. He's really nothing. Buttigieg is just nothing. And I know I have lots of friends who disagree with me, especially gay friends who are just, you know, besotted with the idea of a gay person getting into Congress.
And into the White House. He's not running for Congress.
I'm sorry,
yeah,
getting into the White House.
Yeah,
it would be bad enough for him getting into Congress.
I hear you.
But getting into the White House, yes. They just, like, love the idea. And, you know, that's why I hate identity politics so much. You know, it's just, you know, what does the guy stand for? Who is he going to be working for? You know, he's just awful. And when you put him up against Bernie or you put him up against Elizabeth Warren, it's just so sad. I was kind of happy to see him and Beto go after each other.
Yep.
I'm not a big
Beto
fan
either,
for the presidency either, obviously.
No.
But I kind of enjoyed the two of them attacking each other.
Yeah, that worked for me. I thought they should take each other out. To me, they're sort of interchangeable. Just they fit in the same box for me. Anyway,
kind of do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Buttigieg is worse.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't see either one of them getting anywhere near the White House.
No, me either. And yeah, so there's that. So you have a post up at downwithtyranny.com about the candidates post their numbers. Were there any surprises that you saw out of
not so much surprises. But, you know, if this is the post that I have up isn't so much about the presidential candidates.
No.
I mentioned something or two. But what it was about is the congressional candidates.
Right.
And really what I was trying to get at, and you have to sort of plow through the post to get to it, is that the DCCC. So I am only dealing with freshmen.
Okay.
So the Democrat, not even the Republican freshmen, just the Democratic freshmen. So the DCCC basically says to all these guys and gals, forget about policy. We'll handle that. You just stay at the DCCC headquarters and call rich people and ask them for money.
Dial
and
for dollars.
Don't do anything else.
Right. Dial for dollars.
On the phone,
yep.
hours a day. This is how much you have to raise every single day. If you don't raise this amount every single day, you're out of your job. You want that career, and this is the hump year. And if you don't make it this year, you're not going to make it. And you know, they just drive them crazy. And you know, if you'll notice, all of the new Dems and the blue dogs are the ones who did really, really great. And that's because they listen to the DCCC. Now, there are different reasons why some of these freshmen raised less money. Some of them don't need to raise a lot of money because they have really, really safe districts, mm-hmm. and no primary and, you know, no real Republican threat whatsoever. So they don't have to, you know, drive themselves crazy calling people. So, you know, someone like Deb Haaland in Albuquerque, she didn't have anything to worry about.
Oh, good.
So she raised a couple of hundred grand. The DTRIP wants you to at all times have between $1 and $1.5 million in your war chest. And if you spend money, you've got to replace it immediately. You've always got to have between $1 million and $1.5 million in your war chest. And they drive these people crazy. You know, AOC did great. She raised $1.9 million. She's in a safe district, but she's got a primary.
Republicans
are throwing immense amounts of money against her. They're not going to win the seat against her, but they want to smear her in every way possible to prevent her from going on in her career. Whether she runs for the U.S. Senate against an asshole like Schumer, or eventually runs for president, or against Kirsten Gillibrand at some point.
Uh-huh.
But so they or goes for a leadership post in the House. They just don't want to see her getting ahead.
But Hallie, anyway, she raised the third most money out of all the freshman Democrats at $1.9 million, and she doesn't do the call times dialing for dollars, does she?
That's right.
Right.
So she followed a different model, which is a model that was originally pioneered by two members of the House. First, Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. and then Alan Grayson.
Wow.
Those were two people that were able to, although they did, both of them called people, but they didn't, you know, they didn't sit every day on the phone for hours and hours.
Right.
Neither of them did.
Right.
But yet they both raised immense amounts of money by working for their constituents and knowing how to discuss issues in a compelling way that people were interested in, getting on the media and doing that. And they both raised more money. Each of those guys raised more money from the grassroots who appreciated that approach than anyone else in Congress had done at that time. And now AOC is doing the same thing. Ilhan Omar is doing the mm-hmm. same thing. They're raising large amounts of money and not going and scraping and begging to wealthy people and making them promises the way some of these conservatives do. So that's a really good thing. I spent a lot of time on the phone yesterday with another ultra progressive. Who's somewhat not as well known, but you should get to know him also, Andy Levin.
Okay.
So Andy is from not as safe a seat. It's a D plus four, so he's not endangered, but it's still a seat where it could be contested. And if the Republicans have a good year, they can take a seat like that. And he literally has a slightly better voting record. He has the best voting record in the House. Let's
really?
Put it like that.
Wow.
There's got to be one person who's got the best. It's
and
Andy
it's
Levin.
Wow.
The best of
He's of Michigan. Is there any relation to Carl or Sander Levin?
Yeah, he's family for both of those
oh,
guys.
Wow. Okay.
An uncle and a father.
Gotcha.
I think.
All right. All right.
So, but you know, and I shouldn't be talking at a school this way. I feel a little funny saying this, but when I said to him, can't you get their lists and use their lists? He said, no, I don't want their lists. Their lists are full of lobbyists.
Oh, interesting.
So he's on his own. He didn't do badly. He raised a few hundred grand, or he has a few hundred grand. But it's not what the DTRIP wants from a freshman. They must be freaking out on him today. I'm sure they are. But you know, his point of view is he wrote this up for me, and it's in the Post, at the bottom of the Post. He said what he'd rather be doing than being on the phone making calls, and they have to do with serving the American people and serving the people of his district. That's what he would rather be doing, and he knows he doesn't want to leave Congress. He wants to be in Congress, so he knows he's got to raise some money. So he asked me to help him raise some money, and I'm trying.
I am trying.
In that post, there's a link to a website where you can donate to him. I hope people do.
All right.
And it's worth doing. He's, like I said, he's got the number one best voting record. It's pretty amazing.
That's very
and
cool.
And he's a hardworking guy. He's not a showboat. He is a real hard worker, especially when it comes to anything to do with unions, anything to do with working class families. He's devoted his whole life to it. Even before he got into Congress, that's what he was doing. So, you know, it's valuable. And his perspective on how to do fundraising and what to do about it is a good one, too. You know, he doesn't want to waste money on nonsensical TV ads either. He wants to go about doing it the right way and staying in Congress. And he doesn't feel he needs to raise, you know, gargantuan sums of money. I hope he's right. But he feels that, you know, that he needs to raise enough money to be reelected.
Sure.
And he doesn't need money away so that he can, you know, what a lot of these congressmen do is they raise lots and lots and lots of money and then hire relatives who then get large sums of that money. Well, look at a guy like Duncan Hunter, who's going to be in prison soon. What did he do? He raised large sums of money by yelling and screaming about how much he's like Trump. And so people poured money into his campaigns, and then he lived on it. He hired prostitutes with it. He had several wives at the same time with it. And his main family lived on it. I mean, you know, his wife went to the hairdresser. His kids went to the dentist. He bought athletic equipment and musical equipment. And that's what and this isn't what a guy like Andy Levin is going to ever do in his life. This is something that would, like, make him leave Congress immediately rather than do something like that.
Right.
But this is not uncommon. There are, I mean, conservative Democrats who do the same thing. And, you know, I shouldn't even say conservative. There are Democrats
and
lots and lots and lots of Republicans who do the same thing. It's illegal. When they get caught, and usually because they do it so big, like Hunter did it to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he was drunk all the time, and he was, you know, flaunting the fact that he was on substances, that's when you get caught. But most of these guys don't get caught. They do it, and they don't get caught.
Well, they have, you know, look, they have Donald Trump as a role model who just, everything, doesn't give a shit at all about breaking the law. He flaunts it, which is just astounding. Just astounding.
And these guys, I mean, Duncan Hunter's not that worried. He knows he's going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
He hopes he can, get a lighter sentence. Same thing with the other one, the other big Trump supporter. The Duncan Hunter and Chris Collins from the Buffalo area.
Right.
The two of them were the first members of Congress to ever endorse Trump. They argue about who did it first.
Right.
But basically, let's just say it was the same day. So, and they're both going to prison for financial fraud, and you know what? They both know that Trump is going to get them out before his term is up.
Ugh.
That he will pardon the both of them.
Unbelievable. Well, hopefully Trump will be stripped of his pardoning powers soon. One last thing, Howie Klein. So Bernie, during the debate, said was asked about how he can prove he's manly enough to make it through the campaign and be president. And he said, well, come out to the rally in Queens on Saturday. We'll have a special guest. I looked at David, my husband, and said, Queens? AOC is going to endorse him. And sure enough, before the thing ended, they were confirming that AOC is going to endorse him. And I guess Ilhan Omar as well. That's good for...
Rashida Tlaib?
Rashida Tlaib apparently is not going to. At least tomorrow, on Saturday, she's going to give him a tour of her district. I think it's October 27th, and we'll probably do it in a standalone there. So, So it's just a matter of a week. But yeah, so that's good news for Bernie.
It is good news for Bernie, and it's good news for them too. The three of them have had immense amounts of money pouring into their campaign war chests.
Yep.
In the last 2 days.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they'll all do well
announced.
Anyway,
yep.
But I see it because we collect money for them.
Sure.
And every time I open that page, I'm seeing, you know, $10, $100, money just coming into them, and it's just those three. So
gotcha.
If it's just those three, you know why it's just those three. It's not a normal situation.
No, it's the Bernie effect. All right.
Yes.
Works for me. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and the Blue America Pack. Thank you, Howie. I'll talk to you next week.
Great. Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye. And with that, yes, we're done for the day. I was going to have Jason Butler on from North Carolina, who's running for Congress. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow or next week. Either way, we're going to start featuring some congressional candidates. Maybe we'll do a twofer tomorrow, because tomorrow we're also going to speak with Jen Perlman, who is from down here. She's actually running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So we'll meet her together tomorrow. Okay? All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your head up. Bye-bye.